Well, he's here. He's picked up his baggage from, the arrivals hall. It was there. That's pretty good. So he has it. Mark O'Toole, you're very welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Declan.
So where'd you fly in from?
From New York, from Newark Airport this morning. So, yeah, I'm sort of fading fast as the day goes on.
Yeah, and of course, are Bray.
I am from Bray originally. Yep, I grew up, born and bred here. Won a green card in the lottery years ago. And it's been nearly 25 years over in New York. But grew up behind the Harbour Bar.
Did you?
Slinging pints there through my youth.
And you weren't connected with the family, owned the
I am, yeah.
Bar.
My dad was Des O'Toole. He owned the bar with my uncle Paul. Both of them have since passed away. My college was spent in my high school, and my dad had me down there when I was like my son's age today, stacking bottles and cleaning the toilets. The good times.
So off to New York with a green card. Did you know what you were going to do?
No idea. I had a green card, packed my bags, $300 in my pocket. I think it was $300. It was the Wild West, you know. And when I left then, the Celtic Tiger hadn't hit. There wasn't a whole lot of opportunity here. So really, you know, it wasn't that I wanted to leave, but it just, that's where the opportunities were. And things worked out pretty well for me.
And armed with your green card, what was your first job?
First job was selling computer chips, brokering computer chips, if you could believe that, DRAMs, SRAMs, things like that, you know, factory order, buying chips from Japan, fulfilling orders for chips that go into, you know, manufacturing in the US, for example. Yeah, it was kind of a, never heard of it before, but hey, it paid good money at the time. So that was my first job.
Right, so you're saying 25 years. I mean, you've gone through different, different things you were doing, I suppose, over that time.
Yeah, you know, I'm sort of a bit unusual in the sense that I've always had sort of a dual track effort here. One part artistic and the other part professional. On the artistic side, you know, I kept very much in that. You know, I had co-founded a theatre company called Storm Theatre when I was in the US. COVID, after 20 years, finally put that out of business. Certainly in New York anyway, unfortunately. And I'd been involved in films and things like that along the way. So I have a large Irish arts community in New York that I'm still friends with and still engaged with. And then aside from that, I work in fintech. That pays the bills. That's been an interesting ride too.
Right. New York, even though lots of movies are centred around New York and lots of films are, it doesn't strike me as being the centre of movie making.
You know, it's funny you say that. I mean, I live in Manhattan, and literally every day you walk into a film set. You know, so whether it's Law and Order, still shooting in Manhattan, or it's The Equalizer, or a bunch of shows I don't even watch. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, I do watch that. They have their last season coming out now. That's all filmed on the Upper West Side. Always. So, I mean, I walked by last summer, not Brad Pitt, what's the other guy's name? One of those A-listers, anyway, filming in Central Park.
Yeah.
There's lots of incentives like we have here in Ireland for filmmaking.
God, you'd hardly think they needed it, with it being New York, it'd have a head start.
It makes it difficult to film there, in my opinion. You know, it's expensive, you got to get permits and you got to do all of those things. So, but it has that sort of, you know, if you've ever been to New York, you walk in, it's like walking onto the film sets you see, on the TV, and to keep it authentic. But I can always tell when somebody films in Canada or substitutes New York somewhere else. If you're living in New York, know immediately. Just even the pavement looks wrong, you know. Rarely do they get it right. Occasionally, sometimes they do cheat it a little bit. Most of the time it's easy to spot.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about New York that I like, I mean, we if you go over and you're a tourist and you visit, it's all Times Square and all that sort of stuff. But to get down into, you know, the end of Manhattan, so the red bricked houses and the small little bars and the restaurants and things, I mean, that's magical. I was only there a couple of times, but it blew my mind saying, this is not New York. This is not skyscrapers. This is real community. And I just thought it was great.
People are always amazed by that people live there. You know, it's not just the tourist trap, right? And you're right. It's in the burbs is where the heart of New York is. It's, you know, and by that I mean just uptown, downtown, Brooklyn, Queens, Bronx, right? And people are always amazed that I can bring up kids there, but there's loads of, you know, millions of playgrounds were by the river there, lots of parks and things like that. So it's not all, you know, when you come to New York as a tourist, you're probably in Midtown looking at the, you know, the skyscrapers and all those usual spots. But, you know, you walk a little further, you explore a little bit more, it starts to get a little more interesting, I think, in that sense. Yeah.
So we're here to talk about, you know, what you got up to during the pandemic and armed with an iPhone, and you've, you know, achieved something spectacular.
Yeah, well, thank you. I made a documentary called Outside In, and at the time I didn't know I was making a documentary. New York had just shut down as part of the COVID shutdown back in March of spring 2020. And, you know, we'd spent a couple of weeks watching Italy going through a very similar thing there, and people were just shouting out their windows and crying and all. You know, it was just very dystopian and horrific. And then, you know, in our mind, that was over in Italy. That wasn't going to happen here. And then within weeks, it happened in New York. And I just felt compelled, the old filmmaker in me, you know, I got to document this and also at the same time keep my sanity. And you know, I had been training for a race, a half marathon that was since cancelled, and I thought, well, look, you know, I'll go outside if anything, just to get out of the house, because everybody was inside. And what shocked me initially was nobody else was outside. And so it really felt like, you know, I Am Legend, that Will Smith movie they made years ago, which incidentally they're making a reboot, but it really was a real live version of that, my is the zombies. And then I thought, okay, this is really interesting and nervous all at the same time. And I got a gimbal, like a Steadicam device, to put on my phone. I couldn't rent proper gear because every store and shop in New York was shut down, but you know, improvised and managed to get some good results from that.
Right, so did you have a, you know, an end for your start of what you were doing, or did situations present themselves to you and you said, just have to have that included, and you maybe changed the direction of what you were doing, or was it stand back and observe?
I think it was the latter, because initially I didn't know, you know, other than just let's point and shoot and document and be there and observe. And really that's what, you know, when you're making a documentary, that's a good way to have things evolve for you. And in the process of doing that, then we sort of came head to head with the riots in New York City. You know, most people probably don't realize there were riots in New York City, and we had curfews and you couldn't go outside past 7 o'clock. And there were protests, you know, over the George Floyd. I mean, it was a compendium of chaos, you know, coming out of that spring. And, you know, I was there with my camera and I was able to capture that. But it wasn't until later that I thought, okay, how do I build a narrative, you know, a narrative framework around that to make it interesting and not boring? I mean, you know, empty streets in New York is one thing, but to try and, you know, create a story. So ultimately, at the end of the day, I made it a personal story that includes a lot of that stuff, and short and snappy, but it certainly captures the zeitgeist of the moment, I think.
And a snapshot of that time.
Yes, a time I hope nobody ever experiences in that city again, and anywhere else. I mean, you know, it's interesting. The film's played around the world, and some of the, what I've observed there is people are engaging with the documentary through the prism of their own experience at that time, in their own version of their lockdowns. And what they, I mean, this was a global thing. It wasn't a New York thing specifically, but it seems to sort of resonate just beyond, you know.
What you leave out, Mark?
What did I leave out?
Because I'm sure you had so much, and you know, you were conscious of duration.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, you know, it's funny you asked me that. So I've you know, I've hours and hours of footage, you know, and some folks at Netflix had reached out. They were making a documentary and they were looking for a ton of, well, they found some of my stuff online and said, hey, can we use that? And I said, well, yeah. I was all excited initially, and, you know, and then they said, well, can we use a bit more? And next thing you know, we're up to like 40 minutes. And, you know, they said, well, how much are you going to pay me for that? And they said, nothing, we've no money. And but yes, these were very well-known producers in Hollywood. I think people here would even recognize their names. So I called a friend of mine, Mary Prendergast, who's an old filmmaker friend out in California, and she recommended I talk to this guy called Mark Lipson, who made The Thin Blue Line. And she didn't tell me that's who I was going to be talking to, but if I'd have known that, I'd have been very nervous. But he said, you know, they have a budget, they're getting paid, don't give them a damn thing. And he gave me some tips on how to negotiate it. And in the end, I walked away because, you know, they wanted, I should have been the producer of the documentary with the amount of stuff. But, you know, roll forward a little later, and I am on, you can see some of my footage on Amazon Prime right now in a documentary called Broadway Rising. It's directed by Amy Rice and produced by Modern Family's Jesse Tyler Ferguson. And so they captured a lot of the, it's about Broadway in the COVID and what happened to that. It's a $14 billion business just went kaput overnight. And so all my footage is the before, or at least what happens before Broadway recovers. So yeah, it found a new life.
Excellent. So when can we see New York?
So I will be in the Harbour Bar on Thursday night, and we're going to show it upstairs in the bar there. We're going to have a moderated Q&A afterwards, and it's a free screening, so all are welcome.
Right, so Thursday night. In the Harbour Bar.
In the Harbour Bar. Bringing it all back
home. Of the ancestors.
Yes, exactly.
There. Very good. Thursday night upstairs. That's a lovely setting anyway, upstairs.
Oh, it's where my dad grew up. It's where my grandma, so it's sort of weird, but the Duggins did a wonderful job doing the place up.
Because they kept it. They kept it the way it was.
They kept the essence of it, but they managed to do upstairs, and I thought they did a good job there.
Yeah, very good. And if people want to find out more about Mark O'Toole?
You can go to, we have a website, outsideindoc.com, or I'm on Instagram. I think it's SurrealNYC on Instagram. I have a blog, but I mean, they're the two. You'll find me through anywhere there, through those website links.
Nice to meet you, Mark. Are you going home to bed?
I am. I am, if I'm going to get through today.
Very good. Okay, Mark O'Toole, filmmaker, Thursday night in the Harbour Bar upstairs. You can have a glimpse of New York during the pandemic. Thanks for coming in, Mark.
Thank you, Declan. Cheers.
Thank you. Good to meet you.